Hi, and welcome to the podcast on the Cloud Evangelist website. My name is Richard Morrell. You're listening to episode 17. I never thought we'd get to 17, but we're finally at 17. And I'm joined today by Matt Hicks. Matt, introduce yourself.
Hey, Richard. This is Matt Hicks, and I was one of the founding members of the OpenShift effort at Red Hat, which is Red Hat's platform as a service, and spent a lot of years in IT roles and development roles before that, but now these days it's a lot of time in platform as a service and working in the cloud.
It's interesting. If you were at Boston and at the summit earlier on this year, you'd have seen people queuing out the door to hear Matt talk. So I don't know how you get so many people in a room, dude. Genuinely don't. Especially when it's such a boring topic. No, joking with you. So OpenShift PaaS, OpenShift hosted PaaS, on-premise PaaS. It's the buzzword du jour. I've been at VMworld in Barcelona, and I was over at the Gig at Home Structure Conference with Brian Stevens last week and Chris Wells in Amsterdam. And everybody wants to talk to us about hosted PaaS. It seems to be this differentiator in the respect that people have been using OpenShift on Amazon, the three clicks to cloud model. It's really got a lot of people very excited about how they move their applications to cloud. And from a development perspective, from a developer perspective, we've enabled OpenShift Origin earlier this year, where you can stand up your own hosted PaaS on a laptop from a purely non-supported model. You know, the juices are running. You know, people are really excited. What's the latest?
Well, yeah, I think the next progression for us is, and we announced this at last summit, but we're really aggressively working towards moving from just a open source project where you can install the code that we've done on your own environment to really moving to a supported product distribution from Red Hat, where you can take the same bits that we use to power our host service, which now has been in operation for almost 2 years at this point. We have a ton of applications running on there. You know, we've really gone through where we wanted to work in the public cloud and show that we could do that with this software base.
Right.
But now the next move is for us to make sure that we can have a rock solid distribution for customers that aren't ready to move to the public cloud yet, but they want to be able to bring something into their own data center that they know gives them eventual portability into the public cloud, whether that's on the bits that Red Hat is running or the bits of somebody else's that's based on OpenShift.
There is a school of thought which says that everything that Red Hat do from a RHEL perspective has to be rock solid and stable. And there was this sort of push around Summit this year saying, why haven't you done it yet? I'm trying to explain to a lot of people that OpenShift on Amazon, although very stable and very secure, was built on latest, greatest sources, so latest versions of Perl, Python, Ruby, etc. And if you were to do a diff compared to a RHEL tree, you would see that we're using conservative, stable, supported versions of, and it's not that easy to just backport everything to put it into a supported distribution where, you know, essentially you're not just running up a Linux ISO image, you're actually running up a development environment which will be hosting applications live. You know, you're not just standing up a Linux distribution to do a basic LAMP stack or whatever you're doing. You're actually putting up a tree which is going to be hosting your applications, your data, and all your privileges. So, you know, we've got to get this right first time.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, we spend a lot of the effort that goes into making this a product distribution for us is making sure that all of the bits and all the dependencies have that same quality and testing and stability that customers are used to with RHEL. And for us, that's been a really tough balance to strike of, we know from the hosted service that developers want latest, greatest of everything. But at the same time, we have to balance that from the development and proof of concept need to what is really required in production. And what are the operational guys, you know, they probably want some newer versions, but they want to be able to have it built and have a company stand behind that where they can really trust those the support of those versions in that software.
But I also think it's a differentiator between us, like between us and Heroku and Google App Engine, in the respect that this is open, that we are essentially showing people what's under the hood.
Yep. Well, and it's, I think that's where we'll really build ecosystem at that point, because, you know, obviously Red Hat, we spend a lot of time on the core engine that's behind OpenShift. And the core engine itself is open source as well. We have, you know, basically anybody can put in pull requests based on GitHub out there to be able to change and influence various things. But where I really see the ecosystem evolving is in other people developing cartridges and developing quick starts and things that don't necessarily have to learn all the ins and outs of the OpenShift engine, but they can take their own software that they're passionate about, package it up on OpenShift, and be able to have it run in these environments, because we do have a hosted service now with a lot of reach, which is pretty exciting. And OpenShift Origin has an open source project just starting to build more and more reach. And then the third component of that is when Red Hat has a supported distribution of OpenShift as well. Yeah. It really has a nice vehicle for whether it's ISV software providers or just other open source projects to be able to get their software running in that environment in a very standardized way and be able to get it in front of a lot of users.
It's interesting. When you look back through the mists of time, and we've talked before in the past about our open source roots and, you know, the first distributions that we used, the Calderas, the original versions of Red Hat and RHEL. And you look back to how people tried to make things easy with Webmin and PHP MyAdmin, where we were really just scraping the top, where people who didn't want to work at the CLI had the ability to have some web-based front-end to be able to do DHCPD config or to install packages or to stop and start Samba or to do configuration changes. And you look at the time change, the time difference between then and now, and the ability to now manage your whole enterprise essentially through a web-based interface and to be able to do all that granularity of reporting and, you know, multi-honed enterprises across clusters, you know, and across territories. It's absolutely amazing what we've achieved in such a short period of time in technology, isn't it? And I think Red Hat's really been at the cutting edge of that.
It is. I've spent really the last decade practically in IT and in a lot of cases in very traditional IT environments where you're racking, stacking, you know, machines and data center based deployments, all the way up to where virtualization started to take hold and then infrastructure as a service really started to take hold. And so it does amaze me as I watch the progression of what's possible now from, you know, the issues that you had to deal with when you were managing your own data center, and then how much infrastructure as a service started to simplify that. But then you move to, well, you know, the provisioning aspect is simpler, but now you still have all the application complexity. And I think PaaS is able to make that same mark there, where you're able to standardize your application processes to an extent where you're really starting to get closer and closer to that dream state where, you know, think up an idea and you can execute it as fast as the business wants you to.
I know, and I think there's also changes in the roles and responsibilities in IT departments globally now, because demarcation lines are becoming really blurred.
Yeah.
You know, the developer has much more power. He doesn't have to have, you know, those change controls, those network requests, someone to open up a port, someone to stand them up an Oracle environment, because it's just there. It's a virtual instance he can spin up by using this hosted PaaS solution. It's going to make some IT managers feel very insecure.
Yeah, no, and I think that is the balance of, I think the IT shops that embrace it are really the ones that are going to, you know, lead their companies and their, you know, respective business units into the next generation of IT. And I think those that resisted and want to hold all of the control aspect, I think it's eventually going to topple, just because people are starting to see the progress and the momentum that can be made if you're utilizing stuff.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was trying to explain to someone the other day that it's the difference between moving from NetWare to Linux. You know, if you want to be left behind in an IPX stack, good for you, but we moved on. So, keeping the OpenShift message secure, there's a lot of stuff underneath the hood that helps the whole equation stay nice and safe. So we have SVERT and we have SE Linux, and we've got a lot of good technology and good people in Red Hat who are working very hard to make stuff happen, OpenSCAP, etc., etc. Talk to me about your thoughts around the use of SE Linux. especially in cloud and virtualization.
Yeah, so, you know, for us, one of the things that we started really early on with platform as a service is how we could better leverage SE Linux. And even my experience with SE Linux, when you're newer to the technology and you're in a very traditional IT environment and you're trying to build your own custom policies to lock down unstructured environments, it can actually be pretty daunting and difficult. You know, SE Linux works extremely powerful, but it works at a really low level.
Yeah.
And so when we started to design how we thought platforms as a service could work, one of the most powerful things was it is a standardized environment again. And so we wanted to change the security model from, you know, the old security model of plug every single possible hole that hackers could find, you know, which is sort of my oversimplified view of discretionary access control, and actually move it to a mandatory access control where we know what these applications should be doing, and we should be whitelisting the functionality that they should be doing so that you can actually sleep at night a little bit of, if somebody, you know, if a behavior isn't supported, it's going to be blocked by default. And to do that, we utilized SE Linux and built custom policies in terms of what we think are, you know, the 80% of things that applications are going to need to do in a PaaS. And we've open sourced those. Those are in Fedora and also in OpenShift Origin. Mm-hmm. And but the best part about it, because SE Linux is extensible, if our 80% doesn't fit your use case that well, you can extend it and lock it down even further, or you can override things and open up some more flexibility. But the nicest part is it's finally moving us out of this mode of having to find every single backdoor and loophole that people are going to exercise against your applications.
I don't get tetchy. I think tetchy is the wrong word, but I do. My eyebrows twitch when I stand talking to IT administrators and sysadmins who say, yeah, we turned SE Linux off by default. And I'm thinking, great, well, obviously you have a huge amount of time on your hands to just walk through syslogs, and you also have, you must have some really nice Perl scripts running, going through cron jobs, looking at logs, understanding, or you've got some third-party hardware sitting on your platform doing intrusion detection, or Snort is your friend. And it just seems to be the fact that I think they think that it's making them more work than it is, and I think it's just a lack of understanding.
Yeah, I dealt with this all the time, where when we first started OpenShift Origin, we didn't put in the more complicated policies that we thought people should be using, because our first goal, I would joke about it in conferences, but my first goal was, I just didn't want you to run set enforce zero.
Yeah.
You know, that unless you know what you're doing, where you're really going to try to run things through and see, you know, what's getting blocked. But getting out of that default of turning it off was one of our first goals. And for us, that's meant, you know, we're trying to make the use of SE Linux in OpenShift a very natural thing, where people don't, they aren't seeing it block random things. And I actually think SE Linux has progressed a phenomenal amount over the last few years.
Yeah, over the last 3 or 4 years, it has. It's become, well, I wouldn't say stable. It's become more accepted, and the templates have been, you know, more user-friendly, and the ability to be able to do better log file analysis and better audit trails, it's just there.
Yeah, I think if people can break the habit of turning it off, they will not really notice that it's on anymore. Yep. But they'll notice that it's on when it counts.
Yeah.
They just won't notice that it's on when it's causing a pain.
It's like, it's free, it's there, why didn't you just turn it on? Oh, because it creates me more work. No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Okay, so we did a podcast about 4 months ago with Daniel Boronger, who's doing a huge amount of work with the OpenStack team under Brian Stevens with Esvert. We went to the London OpenStack Consortium. I think it was their kickoff meeting, and he was explaining to the crowded room what Esvert gave them from a segregation and separation perspective, and I think the penny was starting to drop about why SE Linux and Esvert are important. And I keep trying to explain to people who are using VMware or Hyper-V, where they're standing up their instance and then having to think about securing it, rather than when we kick off KVM, which is secured within the kernel, and you have the benefits of SE Linux providing that jail-treated segregation around that instance. And I think that maybe, you know, we need to bang that drum a little louder sometimes, because, you know, there's still a lack of awareness in the proprietary community that they think that security is something that you fit by retrospect, not mm-hmm. by aspect of design or the point of provision. So I think that's maybe something that we need to write white papers about and be... I mean, security is not a sexy topic. I've been doing it for 10 and a half, 12 years now, and, you know, it's not a turn-on for most sysadmins and most IT directors or CIOs. It's more something that they... a bitter pill that they have to swallow. And I think that we need to start saying to people a little bit more aggressively, you know, this stuff will get you out of jail or keep you out of jail. Let's not work out what happened. Let's work out what didn't happen. There's nothing more boring than looking at an empty log file.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, you look at how multi-level security has improved over the last couple of years, where you can have SE Linux-based security at the virtualization layer. You can have SE Linux-based security at the container layer. You can have SE Linux-based security at the host layer. And on top of that, you're still going to have additional layers of security, but it's just that mindset of getting it to setting it up from the beginning and having those layers of security in place is going to save you so many issues down the road of, you know, trying to deal with an exploit or, you know, or just various things. I think it's a great practice for people to really start readdressing and figuring out if they're using all the things that they could from the get-go.
Okay. Matt, I've really enjoyed doing this podcast with you. We tried to do this a couple of weeks and technology let us down, or more, I think building contractors let us down. So I'm grateful for you having made the time out of your day to do it, especially with the time difference. I'm going to disappear off on honeymoon. You're going to be published by a Perl script, which probably will make your eyes twitch, but there you go. I'm very grateful. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks a lot, Richard, and enjoy the honeymoon.
I'm going to try. I'm going somewhere where there's no TCP/IP or 3G. I'm going to be very, very itchy. It could be the shortest marriage in history. Thanks, guys.